Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is The Savage Nation. Veterans Day, from God to Google in one generation. I was thinking about that on the bicycle. From God to Google in one generation. Well, at least that's the way it looks to me tonight on The Savage Nation. If you ever read The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, there's a line that I particularly find interesting. The orgiastic future that year by year recedes before us. It eluded us then, but that's no matter. The orgastic future. I think he meant orgiastic future that year by year recedes before us. We all think we're going to have this perfect future that is orgiastic. And then one fine morning we wake up and realize there is no future. And then one fine morning the veteran finds himself in a little encampment in the hills of North Afghanistan, fighting an insurgency being forgotten by the American people. Or one fine day in the past, the boys find themselves digging holes in the snow in the Ardennes forest, facing 88-millimeter barrage from the Germans. And they see their friends atomized in the next foxhole, and they wonder, why did the artillery shell land in their friend's foxhole and not their foxhole? Did God hate their friend and love them? Can they still believe in God in a situation like that? But let's bring it back home on the Savage Nation on this Veterans Day, since it's a day of remembrance and thanks, obviously, because the truth is, and it's not just a homily, I owe my freedom of speech to those who died in wars before. I owe my freedom of speech to those fighting Obama today, because as sure as I'm sitting here, Obama and the acolytes around them would steal my freedom of speech if they had the power to do so. If they dared grab it, they would do it. There's no question in my mind that the Revolutionary Guard surrounding Obama would take away my freedom of speech, your freedom of speech, just as Abraham Lincoln did during his tenure as a dictator in the United States of America. Never forget that Lincoln, who was revered and held up on a pedestal, you know, some great, wonderful saint, Lincoln was a dictator. Lincoln was a horrible human being and a dangerous president. Popularly, as a kid in school, you hear he's freed the slaves. That's wonderful. But what you don't know is General Sherman of the South also wanted to free the slaves. It wasn't about the slaves. It was about a couple of things. The South wanted to secede because it was doing very well without sending money to the North. And the North wanted to dominate the South economically. And Lincoln was a dictator. No freedom of the press. Anyone spoke out against him, he arrested journalists. You don't know this. You look at a penny and you think Honest Abe. Well, he took power into his hands in a way that America hadn't seen before and didn't see until FDR. And now we're seeing it again under this wonderful character in the White House, Barack Obama. And never forget that one of Obama's mentors was Abraham Lincoln. And when you didn't agree with Lincoln, they arrested you. Oh, well, it was done for the sake of America, you see. Lincoln did it to protect America and for the betterment of America. Doesn't that sound familiar to you? It should sound familiar too, because Obama has threatened the GOP with executive orders on all of his new ideas. That was Friday night while you were, I don't know what you were doing. President Obama on Friday night continued throwing his entire second term agenda against the wall, challenging Republicans to join him and support more federal spending, pass amnesty for 30 million or 50 million illegal aliens, and tackle all of the other left-wing challenges. We saw how well he did with Obamacare. And that doesn't stop him. The man doesn't understand that it's a failure. The man keeps ratcheting up his partisanship. He keeps ratcheting up his left-wing fanaticism, no matter what failures he faces. It's never enough for these left-wing. And I consider them the equivalent of the Revolutionary Guards in Iran. Make no mistake about it. Those around Obama are just as fanatical as Iran's Revolutionary Guards. The IRC in Iran is no more fanatic than those surrounding Obama in so many ways. And unfortunately for us, he turns his wrath on the American people, not on our enemies. In fact, he sent John Kerry, the great friend of Israel, to stab Israel in the back. Who better to stab Israel in the back than John Kerry? Anyway, it's the Veterans Day show on the Savage Nation. I have a couple of questions for you. And I don't know what they are. Do I? What is your favorite? Who is your favorite veteran? I mean, that's a standard meat and potatoes question. We'll get Millie calling about her, you know, her uncle or whatever. That's okay. I'm in a cynical mood today. We could do one of those. You've heard it all day long. You're probably burned out. Where is everybody today? What are they, skiing? There's no snow. We have a drought in California. Oh, I wanted to talk about the Philippines. 10,000 people. That's a lot of people dead. I'm surprised that Al Gore hasn't flown out there to try and peddle something about global warming. But putting aside my cynicism, 10,000 people died. So you still believe in God the next day. Now, many of them are, by the way, religious. Good Catholics. Why did God kill all 10,000? They did something wrong? What do you mean? They cast their seed upon the ground? What did they do wrong? What did they do wrong that they should all have been killed? Why was... How the tidal wave distinguished between the good and the evil? Let's say you spend your whole life being good, and a tidal wave comes into your little coastal town. The tidal wave is going to spare you and kill your evil neighbor? No, you can't believe that. So that's why I was joking when I said we've gone from God to Google in one generation. And then tonight we got word of another terrible tragedy. One of the best senators in our Senate, Senator Inhofe, who just a few weeks ago went in for bypass surgery, wonderful son, orthopedic surgeon, and a pilot himself, died in the plane crash last night. Dr. Perry Inhofe was on board a plane that crashed near Owosso, Oklahoma, Sunday night. Dr. Perry Inhofe was an orthopedic surgeon in Tulsa. Imagine all of this study. Can you imagine all of that? He goes to Duke University, studies biomedical engineering and electrical engineering, graduates in 1984. Then he goes to Washington University in St. Louis for medical school, one of the best medical schools in the country. Very tough. Graduates in 1988, then does postdoc training at Barnes Hospital in St. Louis, University of Oklahoma College of Medicine. And he is a pilot himself and a pilot instructor. Engine failure, plane goes down. It bothers me. Why? Why would a good man like this, Senator Inhofe, suffer like this? Why would he be made to suffer like this? He did something wrong, and Dr. Perry Inhofe deserved to die while gangbangers who dispense heroin in the ghetto deserve to live? Tell me, you have an answer to that one? Because if you're going to talk about Veterans Day and faith, let's talk about Veterans Day and faith. You know, all we hear about all day long is, yes, I'm not going to say what you've heard about. Talk radio is about news, but it should be about thought and conversation. It should be about entertaining thought and conversation. It's about faith, right? And I think the hurricanes in the Philippines are one important story, what our veterans have sacrificed to keep us free. But think about it. The Germans are lobbing 88-millimeter shells into the forest. The American men have dug holes in the ground in the snow and ice. And one shell lands in a foxhole and kills the guys. They disappeared. They're atomized. The next guys are living. They don't understand it. They see their friends turn into a mist of blood. Blood and mist. They're gone. They're not even there. Then I read a story this morning that really got to me on the issue of where is God? And that is this man, 88-year-old World War II veteran. Actually, he was a hero. He won many, many medals in Battle of the Bulge. He has a 57-year-old disabled daughter who his son has taken care of his whole life. The son has sacrificed his whole life to sleep at the foot of his sister's bed and care for her. The veteran is very depressed. He has liver cancer, then a liver transplant, then the lungs go. And he said each breath is like being waterboarded. The son comes home, and he hears two pops. The father shot his daughter, then shot himself. So you ask yourself, is he a hero? Is the father a saint, or is he a murderer? I mean, these are questions I want to ask. I mean, maybe it's depressing. If it's too depressing for you, I suggest you go listen to MSNBC, where you can snicker at the American way. Yeah, all night long, you get that bargain. It's a bargain. It's a bargain. General Electric lets them do this because that way they're not outside the door of General Electric demanding they pay their fair share. They're telling you to pay your fair share. China, U.S. armies, by the way, today are going through a joint exercise in Hawaii. Oh, yeah, first time in American history. Never done before except under Barack Hussein Obama. Oh, I'm sorry, they're starting tomorrow. Our friends from China are there. Army officials from China and the U.S. are meeting in Hawaii for an annual disaster relief exercise. And a disaster relief. Do you actually believe the People's Liberation Army is in Hawaii under Obama and this Dr. Strangelove there running the military? What's his name? Dr. Strangelove? Do you actually believe they invited the Chinese troops to our shores for the first time in American history, by the way, in order to train for disaster relief? I don't. I don't believe it all. I don't believe it at all. I think Obama's giving them a little feel for the terrain. But let's let it go with that. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. I'm still warming up. Now, how do I feel tonight is the issue. That'll determine where I go with the show. As I told you, I suffered a neck injury about 4 weeks ago from a masseuse. Yeah, I swear to God, I don't let anyone touch my body, basically. I've gotten very far in life. I don't go into the body manipulation. I don't like it. It's unnatural for me. I hate massage. I hate it. I've always hated it. When I was 18, I got a massage once. I hated the guy. He was a sadistic SOB. I was in the Bahamas with some friends. The guy was like a monster. I was 18, in very good shape. I was a weightlift. I walked out like I was in pain for a month. So I decided then never, ever to get a massage. I got talked into it. And, wow, the neck went out. She gave a dig. It was like, you know what Rolfing is? I said gentle. I'm lucky she didn't do a snap. It could have been like a movie snap. And the thing is, the dog hated her, didn't trust her the whole time, kept snapping at her feet. No, now that I think, I'm looking back now. He kept running in the living room while I'm on the table and nipping at the feet. And she's saying, Teddy, get out of here. Teddy, go away. I said, it's okay. I'll ask her to leave. She says, no, I got him under control. Like a Brunhilde from Auschwitz. Like a Brunhilde. And neck, all of us. It just was an hour into the massage now. Setting me up. It's like giving a turkey a jigger of vodka before slaughtering it. A friend of mine, an old colonialist from the islands, taught me that. He said that's how they used to do it in the islands. Before they would slaughter the turkey, they'd give it a jigger of gin in those days. The turkey would get a little tipsy, then they'd kill it. And he said the meat was more tender. So she lightened me up with a light massage and then gave me a neck. So that's 4 weeks. Then I'm telling you, I'm entertaining you now because, you know, I got sad talking about death and dying. I can't take it. I think I'd rather talk about my neck pain. Then, wait, it gets worse. The neck is out. I told you the foot was out for a while, the right foot. Which somehow I've cured. I don't know. I got a strap. The pose crazy. You get older. Crazy things happen. I'm very lucky so far. Boy, am I lucky. I'm so ahead of the curve. It's all of my vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutrients. Don't listen to the morons who tell you to do what you want. You gotta listen to the idiots. If I had eaten the way my father ate, I would have been dead 40 years. Oh, you do anything you want. Life is too short. What a brilliant way to live in the year 2013. Throw out all the knowledge that everyone's gained over the last 50 years. All the knowledge of nutrition and vitamins, because you know better. Smoke a cigar and just stick pork fat down your stomach. And then tell everybody how smart you are. I say to myself, as people continue to be so ignorant in this day and age, and wonder why people laugh at so-called conservatives who act like the blobs that they are. They look it, they sound it, they walk it, they talk it. I say to myself. So, the foot was out, so I cured it. So then, I can't say who. A family member greatly believes in chiropractic. Now, I don't want to knock chiropractic, because I've known chiropractors. I don't trust chiropractors, really. Chiropractors are always shady. They're about as shady as podiatrists. No, I'm sorry. I told you the story about the shady podiatrist in Jackson Heights whose son became an Anglophile because he was ashamed of his Jewish roots and changed his name. And then became very rich, by the way, doing so. Hid the Jewish roots because the father was like a crazy, like out of a... The father was weird, like a podiatrist. He had like a weird office in Jackson Heights that we used to go to pick the kid up to go out with him. And the father would always come out of a back room. It was such a seedy office with weird contraptions. You know, those doctors are basically tied into the insurance industry. That's what I'm getting at. Chiropractic, all insurance fraudsters. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the special Veterans Day program in the Savage Nation. Well, I've already veered off topic, because to me there is no such thing as a topic. In other words, if I don't veer off topic, the show stinks. Listen to someone for 3 hours droning on about Obamacare. It's enough to break a computer screen, the microphone. I didn't even finish about the chiropractor and where was God in the Philippines. I didn't get to it. I can't. It's hard to develop it all in 1 second. My gift is such that I could do this standing up better. If I could get rolling on a rap and go for an hour or two without a break, then you'd really hear me. No breaks, no interruptions, but then there would be no show. See, that's the conflict. If I could get rolling, it takes me a while sometimes. I don't come out with pre-made pies for you. I got to bake the pie as we're going along. Got to heat the oven up, have a glass of wine, so to speak. You know what I mean? Rub my hands together, then roll the dough. Then once we get the oven the pie in the oven, we can start to really roll on it. But that's what a good show is. Takes an hour and a half to do a good developed idea. So, no, I'm not doing stand-up. This is not a pump for me to go out and do any. And no, never, no live. I am doing a live show, but you can't go to it. My new show opens January 1st. That's not really the new show. The new show is January 2nd. January 1st is the best of Golden Oldies, because a lot of people aren't listening. The stations are still playing sports. Well, January 2nd is my real opening. January 3rd is a Friday, and then that night is my opening night party. I'm having an undisclosed location in San Francisco for, I don't know, 30, 40 people. And I'm going to read my discovered poems that young guy found, the jazz saxophonist. I called him last night. I'm going to have like 50 people, a buffet, some food to celebrate the show's opening. And I'm going to read like an old beatnik thing, sitting on a thing. I'm going to read the discovered poems of Michael Savage, radio poems. Remember I told you the 26-year-old jazz saxophone genius listened to me since he's a kid? And he captured these poems, and he sent them to me. He's going to play the saxophone, having come up from L.A. It's a thing. I'll tape it. I'll put it on my website, okay? Maybe I'll develop something that night.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Great, great music. It really is amazing. It's amazing being at this stage in my career. I could do anything. Isn't it wonderful? There's a certain freedom. It's almost dizzying. Do you realize how free I am on this show? That instead of talking about Veterans Day, I'm talking about feeding birds, feeding turkeys vodka, chiropractors and podiatrists who are basically insurance frauds. Not all of them. Most. Some. Certain. Some are nice. Who knows? I didn't finish the chiropractor story. I have to finish it. The first rule of radio, which I learned the first 3 days in the business 20 years ago, is that if you start a story, you must finish it. If you promise something, you got to deliver on it in the next segment. To make a long story short, some family members like chiropractic. I don't like with the bone cracking. I always feared a broken neck, because I knew a doctor whose father was killed by a chiropractor. Well, he swore he went in on a cold night in Kansas. And the father, you know, died on the table. They said, oh, heart attack. But he says he thinks the chiropractor broke his neck. So I don't let anyone manipulate my neck, my spine, nothing. They're my bones. They're not yours. You know, it's like our bodies ourselves. In that sense, it's my bones, myself. If my bone hurts, it's my business. Leave me alone. That's okay. It works. But it worked for family members. Don't get me wrong. This is a very controversial thing I'm saying. They were cured in many cases. They've avoided surgery. They've been able to avoid the quacks at Stanford who right away cut, burn, and poison through chiropractic. But I was talked into it. He said, okay, just let him do this. I said, okay, but no popping, no touching of the neck. Here are the rules. No neck touching, no spinal manipulation. No, it'll be soft. He'll adjust the leg. And I said, all right, fine. So I fly to L.A. I drive out to the valley about an hour to the miracle worker. It starts out again nice. They all start out the same way. You say gentle, okay. You say no neck, okay. You say no back, okay. The next thing I know, I feel like I'm being torn to pieces. He's yanking my leg. He's twisting my pelvic girdle. He's telling me he's releasing muscles that I didn't even know existed. And believe me, I studied anatomy. I had no idea there were muscles in the pelvic girdle where he was. For 4 weeks now, I feel like I'm crippled. So between the neck and the back, I thought I was finished in life. But okay, I got better. I woke up better. The last few days, I've been healed. I don't know why. I just decided I didn't live with it anymore. So I was talking about that. Nothing. It's not a profound story. There's no punchline with a ha-ha. I'm just telling you what's going on in my head right now. Why I'm questioning God. Because it wasn't God who healed my pelvic girdle. It wasn't God who almost snapped my neck. It wasn't God who did that. It was a crackpot masseuse, number one. See, remember I was telling you that in the Fiji Islands, the colonialist friend, he was a wonderful man, by the way. He was a parasitologist. I love this guy. Originally from Brooklyn, but he affected over the years a British... He liked English. He was an Anglophile. He had gone to the London School of Economics, and then he went to the great tropical schools of tropical medicine when it really, really was a great field. Doug, see, he affected the whole British colonialist thing, not because he wanted to, you know, but he just loved them. So he got the pipe. He was an older guy, I mean, but... And he's a brilliant, brilliant writer, and I love the guy. He was like a mentor of mine. I thought he was so great. He introduced me to Thai food. I never knew what it was. It was like overly spiced Chinese. What did I know from Queens? We ate crispy noodles that killed half the men in Queens. Between the pastrami sandwiches and the bad noodles in the Chinese restaurants on Union Turnpike, the men didn't stand a chance. No, look at the grave markers. You look at the grave markers running from Queens out to Nassau, Suffolk. Take a look at the ages, 49, 50, 51. Yeah, that's because they knew an awful lot about nutrition and health. Listen to the morons. Eat chicken fat. Eat schmaltz. Put fat in your throat. Smoke. It's good for you. Don't worry so much. It's a liberal thing. It's a liberal thing to take care of yourself. Be a real conservative. Drop dead at 39. Oh, I listen to this. I can't believe what I'm hearing. Like Neanderthals. So it was those crispy things that you threw in the soup. What garbage. Nah, they died from that stuff. So, no, look, I'm not putting down all chiropractors. Come on, Larry, don't take it personally. Some people are good chiropractors. Come on, it's not meant to be personalized. But I was telling you, I meant to get some. So my friend, the parasitologist, I won't mention him. He died a few years ago. I love the man. I lost contact with him. He was a bit snotty, too, and arrogant. By the way, no one's perfect. You say, oh, I love them. You talk about a friend. Yeah, well, there were moments I didn't love him so much. There's an arrogance in him. He affected the British a little too much. The little of the Anglophilia got to him, and he started to get really snotty. That part I didn't like. I liked the Brooklyn in him more than I liked the English in him. So I was telling you, he told me that in the old days, the colonialists would feed the turkeys vodka, right? I swear to God, I just opened up Fox News. Tipsy turkeys... New Hampshire birds fed beer for flavor and size. When it comes to pairing beer with poultry, Joe Moret isn't too fussy. His turkeys will drink. But Moret is raising turkeys and has been giving his birds beer since 1993. When he and his workers popped open a few cans after work on a hot July day, a turkey knocked one over and started drinking, he said, and they've been sipping the suds ever since. He says that the lager makes birds fatter, more flavorful, and juicier. Well, look what it's done for Germany. Oh, yeah, it's noticeable, he said. It's not a strong, gamey flavor. It's a nice turkey flavor. And the people love it. The gravy is darker and tastier from the turkeys that drink beer. Now enters PETA. The wackos enter. That's their business now. The animal nut group, PETA, said turkeys shouldn't be fed beer. I don't know. Who cares what they say? But a poultry expert with the University of New Hampshire Cooperative said it is unlikely the birds are suffering. Hey, listen, schmucks from PETA. You know I'm against torturing animals. I'm a great guy with animals, but get off your case already, moron. The turkeys are raised to be killed for food. If you get them drunk, they're going to be less frightened, and they're not going to feel pain, as much pain as they would if they weren't drunk. So, morons, there's a certain limit to your idiocy. Your fanaticism has to have some common sense, doesn't it? Whatever. Kathy Brock, National Director of Humane Heartland, which oversees the treatment of farm animals, said that standards from the American Humane Society don't prohibit serving beer to animals. Oh, good. I consulted with an avian veterinarian who said that while giving beer to turkeys is not a standard protocol, hops could be beneficial for the intestinal tract. You see that? Moret's turkeys are not the first animals to consume alcohol. Japanese farmers have been sent to feed cattle beer to stimulate their appetites, and a winemaker and farmer in the south of France have experimented with feeding cows the remainders of pressed grapes. Sounds like North Beach. To produce meat they've dubbed Vinboven. That stuff is the worst garbage I ever drank in my life, what they drink in the Italian restaurants. That grappa. I hate it. It's the most carcinogenic drink I've ever put near my mouth. It smells like nail polish. Why would anyone drink grappa? Why is that an Italian thing? What is this? You got to understand where the origins of grappa as far as I know, and correct me if I'm mistaken, let's say you're an Italian who drinks a lot of grappa. You're killing yourself, number one. I have nothing against wine. But grappa, you know what grappa is made from? It's the dregs of the vat that is fermented. So how could that not be filled with carcinogenic fusel oils? The dregs of the vat would contain more fusel oils than any other grape-related product. So if you're drinking grappa, I mean, I remember I'd sit in restaurants sometimes in the summer with the guys when I was still going there. I don't go there anymore. I'd rather go to a Subway sandwich shop than an Italian restaurant in North Beach lately. Nothing against anybody. Not a personal. I'm not nothing against anybody. I've changed. I'd rather get a foot long than get a, I can't, it's a family show. I'd rather get a foot long in Subway than go and get, you know what, in one of the, I don't want it anymore. But I would sit outside on some summer nights that were Fellini-esque in North Beach with some guys, and they bring out the grappa, I'd have to leave. The combo between a cigar and grappa was enough to kill anybody. Nobody's body can take that. Say, well, they did it in the old country. How'd that work out for them? You know, there's a lot of myths about what people did in the old country. The guys who lived the longest in the old country didn't drink grappa and smoke cigars day and night. Some did, yes. But by and large, the human body cannot take that. I tell you that. Just study your epidemiology. But if you're an ignoramus and don't know epidemiology, I can't help you. I don't mean to insult you in any way. If you're an ignoramus, enjoy it. Now, where was God in the Philippines? Where was God in the Philippines? Now, I read, if you read some of the Bible, as I do often on the show, and you know that, I'm not a cynical God-fearing man in that sense. It's like a combo. I'm sort of cynical and God-fearing at the same time. It's like hedging my bet. But Mother Teresa was the same way. You got to understand that. If you read Mother Teresa, she said she questioned God all the time toward the end of her life. Now, you don't want to know that. I admire those who have faith. You know, I like to watch boxing matches, speaking of faith. One of the things that I love about boxing matches is the faith that the fighters have. And, you know, usually after the fight, they'll ask the fighter why he won, and they'll often say it's because of Jesus or God, and they cut him off right away, the slime at HBO. They try to edit it out. The guy is excited, he just knocked the other guy out, broke his nose, killed him, broke his back, whatever. And he says, well, it's because I have faith in God. That's why I won. I used to wonder about that when I was a kid. Before the fight, I would see the two fighters. One would get on his knees on one side of the ring and pray to God. And one would get on his knees on the opposite diagonal side of the ring and pray to God. Now, I figured it was the same God. And they both crossed themselves and get up and fight, trying to knock the other guy's brains out. And one would win and one would lose. And I wondered, why would God choose one to win and one to lose? I don't know. Couldn't understand that, but I like the faith. See, that's the part. There's a primitive man in me that enjoys watching that almost animalistic faith in God. I love it. I myself can't feel that. I waver. I read the Bible. I want to believe in the Bible. I find it very interesting from many perspectives, including the fact that there's prophecy in the Bible. But then a part of me is cynical. And I say, I'm looking at the Old Testament. Is it just smart guys who could figure this thing out, you know, or do they really see the future? It's like Nostradamus, you know. I don't know. Is it God's words? Is it man's words? Don't argue with me over this because we'll never come. But I will put you at ease with something because many of you were asking, why am I doubting God? The answer is because I doubt God after the hurricane in the Philippines. 10,000 people died. I mean, every baby that was killed did something. Why? Why did he kill all of them? I used to ask this with the fighters or a school bus, let's say a Christian school bus, goes off a cliff. 32 Christian children are killed. Why? Why? Why were they killed? Tell me, explain that to me. I can explain it to you. Here is how I can explain it to you. Because I was troubled by this question 40 years ago. I had such a faith-based problem 30 to 40 years ago. I didn't know if I could go forward. And here's what I found. I found a little book written by I forget his name. It was a rabbi, and it was about questioning God. He was not an Orthodox religious rabbi, this one. I think he was sort of a liberal reform type. But he was a bright man, and he wrote a book on exactly the same question, which is how can he believe in God when such horrible things happen on the earth, like a whole 10,000 people wiped out? you know, bringing it down home to the, to today. Let's not go back to history. And he said that he believes God is omnipresent but not omnipotent. What does that mean? God is everywhere, but God doesn't control everything that happens. Now, many of you find that offensive, but I don't believe that God controls everything that happens because I believe in free will. I mean, free will gives you the option to be in a certain place at a certain time. Giving you free will gives you the ability to do good, to do evil, to do right, to do wrong, and establish the equivalent of karma through your actions. But when a tidal wave is approaching your village and you're on a sandy beach in straw huts, I'm afraid it doesn't matter whether you're the best person in the village or the worst person in the village. You're both going to drown like rats. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Even UN disaster chief caught by surprise. The scenes of appalling tragedy. We're talking about 10,000 body bags are needed in this in the Philippines. I don't know, maybe Christie can go over there and see if he can do something. He did very well at Sandy. People still without houses, but what the heck? Look where it got him. He could fly into the into Manila and do the Manila Mall or whatever. Him and Obama could do a duet and see what they can do over there. No, you know, look, don't get my cynicism going. With every time, how to help already. The CNN, how to help. Mulking the public. How much of the money goes to someone who was hit by the storm? Zero. Goes to the shysters in between you and the victims. What is America running with money? They sent the Marines already to the Philippines. Instead of sending to kill our enemies, that's Obama's idea of the military, him and Hagel the Bagel. Send him over there to give out the supplies. That's his idea of how to use the U.S. Marines. You talk about a crack-smoking mayor. 10,000 body bags. No, it's unbelievable. You don't know what to make of it. That's why I say it's cynical. It brings out cynicism in me. God. Where was God? The baby was screaming. Didn't lift it up, put it in the reeds, in a papyrus basket, like a Moses. Not even one Moses story out of the whole thing. Zero. And I don't know anyone in the Philippines, not like it's personal to me, but it's grisly. Makes you like, where's the faith go? But I spoke to Jewish people who lived through the Holocaust who came away. They went in God-fearing, they came out, you know, nothing. That's why the Israelis learned. You know, they had a Bible in one hand and an Uzi in the other. The Israelis learned pretty good and pretty early that the God comes out of the barrel of a gun. It wasn't, my faith, don't touch me. No, they threw aside the whole ghetto mentality. That's why the American liberals hate the Israelis, because they can defend themselves. It disgusts them. They'd rather they cower than fight. I was looking at a Big Five outdoor sale. It's amazing. You can't buy them here where I live. They're afraid of guns. Gun Sight Scout 308 Winchester bolt action rifle. Forward-mounted Picatinny rail iron sights. Detachable 10-round. Oh, don't tell Diane Feinstein. Flash suppressor. Wow. Regular $999, $899 for 308 Winchester. That's a nice gun. Here's a Remington with a four-round magazine. That you really have to. 770-3006 bolt action combo 329. These are the worst guns for home defense. The novice, the person who doesn't have a gun, thinks that that's what they should get is a rifle. I love the guys who think they can defend the house. Don't worry, I have a bat. Oh, that's going to help you. That'll help you with a home invasion. Schmucks. Guy's a bat. It's like a rolling pin. All the liberals in New York have a bat, and they remember a bat from the playground. Oh, I have a bat. That's going to help you. Don't get a gun, though. I'm afraid you'll use it on yourself. They're always a gunophobes. See, this is the thing. 12-gauge security semi-auto shotgun. Picatinny rails, 18-inch fixed cylinder bore barrel. Boom. Pistol grip, 429. That's your home defense weapon. This is your shotgun. Your shotgun. Not a shotgun. I'm trying to become illiterate so I have a bigger audience. Your shotgun. I'm eating my beans. I enjoy my beans in a restaurant. Not enjoying the beans. I'm enjoying my beans. God, the level of... Here, tactical 22 long-rail rimfire semi-auto rifle, 259. Don't waste your money. Waste the time. 12-gauge over on the shotgun. You don't want that. For home defense, the barrel's too long. That's for, like, duck hunting. Or killing an innocent goose flying back to Canada. Didn't know what hit it. I don't like geese. I don't mind ducks, but ducks I enjoy looking at. They swim around. They don't bother me. There's always like a boy and a girl duck. They're so sane. They haven't been told that they're violating someone's human rights. All they know is there's a boy duck and a girl duck, and they make little baby ducks and it follows the mother. They haven't checked the book lately on the boy duck. You know what I'm saying? They don't know. I like ducks. Geese I could do without. They destroy everywhere I go. They're like the fields. First of all, the pellets they drop are the size of like my dog Snowy. Disgusting. They should go back where they came from. They go back to Canada. I didn't say kill them. There's something about it. Very aggressive, too. I read the early books on animal behavior, which are done with geese. Remember, I was like a behavioral psychologist at one point in my career. It was done by that guy. He was into like that whole geese thing. Everything was like goose practice. Everything was like studied with geese. How can you draw human? How can you draw any idea about a human behavior from a goose? I didn't understand that. Oh, yes, goose stepping, I understand. The Germans apparently followed the geese a little too closely. A lot of good it did them. How'd that end up? How'd it work out for Berlin in 1945? The goose stepping. So, as I'm saying, the gun thing is good. God comes out of the barrel of a gun. The Israelis learned that. They're not running around with, oy vey, don't hurt me anymore. You understand that? Have the Bible in one hand if you want, but make sure you have an Uzi in the other.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is. I could say it's the Veterans Day show, and it is. I mean, without the veterans, I wouldn't be here. I'd be a lampshade or a bar of soap. So I thank God for the veterans of World War II, and you should thank God for the veterans who keep Obama at bay. He is purging, of course, all the combat commanders one after the other, replacing them with girly men and metrosexuals who will do his bidding. But that's the way of the future. It's the wave of the future. What do you think of it? Speaking of the future, this great line from Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald tonight just keeps coming back. The orgiastic future. The orgiastic future. That orgiastic future that year by year recedes before us. I thought that was so amazing. I heard it the other night in a movie, actually. I woke up today and I said, from God to Google in one generation. You talk about cynicism. How could these young people believe in anything other than they walk around with an iPhone like it's the Holy Grail? They don't look up. She's looking for Mr. Right. She passes him in the street. She doesn't see him because she's looking in her palm for the answer. Hitting every minute. Walks right past Mr. Right. She doesn't understand why. So I'm just going to ramble on and on tonight. I'm not going to do anything cogent, as we would say in science. There is no cogent show tonight. There's no point in being any cogency. What's the point of it? It doesn't sell anyway. Logic is dead, right? Logic is dead, so why be cogent? Since I have an artistic soul, I'll just let it roll. That worked. See, it worked just like since I'm going to let it roll. That was good. The news is horrendous. The news from the home front is awful. The war on the Western Front is worse than ever. Nothing is good in America. Everything's bad. Chris Christie is the hope. That's the great white hope, is Chris Christie. God. Oh, my. But you see, here's the thing. Here's the paradox in that one. The schmucks are so angry that Chris Christie won that they'd rather that they lose an election just to show how smart they are. The schmucks are so mad at Chris Christie that they'd rather lose the next election than see any Republicans win. That made sense. That makes good sense. Ever wonder how the Radical Revolutionary Guard left won? Have you figured out how the Obama Revolutionary Guards took power? It's exactly because of that attitude. Right? McCain was no good. Romney was no good. I voted for Romney. Don't you remember? You don't remember that. I didn't like Romney. I knew he was middle of the road. But don't you remember a week before I came out and said, I'll support him anyway because God knows what we'll have if we get Obama? But many of you, oh, no, I'll show them. I'm a true believer. I'm a purist. I'm an absolutist.
Oh, I'm a fundamentalist. I know what's right for America. I'll let Obama win so it all comes down, and then I'll show them how bad it is. Then they'll really vote for someone. That made sense. That worked out real well. And three more years to go, and it's not over. Just think about Lincoln, the great hero, the Saint Lincoln. Suspended habeas corpus, arrested journalists, politicians who disagreed with him, burnt cities to the ground, arrested anyone who stood in his way. Say, well, he freed the slaves. That's wonderful, very noble. But General Sherman also wanted to free the slaves, and he was a Southern general. Wasn't all one side. So it wasn't about slavery per se. That's the popular notion. So let's you look at Lincoln. Oh, again, hold him up on a pedestal. No, don't put anyone on a pedestal. It's all I can say to you. Human beings are what they are. Any wonder I talk to a dog. Now, I want to talk about a movie. Since the show is mine, and I'm really upset that there's 10,000 people dead in the Philippines, and no one had a chance. They could have been praying in the church for God to spare them. They could have held their little baby up to the heavens. It wouldn't have mattered. When that wave came, they all went under. So, what can I tell you? Now, I saw a movie the other night with an actor in it, Ving Rhames. One of the biggest guys I've ever seen in my life, Ving Rhames. Monster. First, I thought it was Mike Tyson in a jailhouse movie. I'm going to get back to God with this movie. I forget the movie. He plays the biggest guy in the prison, and everyone's afraid of him, as they should be, because he just looks at them. And they bring in, like, young punks who think they're tough. And the guard brings them in to see them. And he sets them straight in about 3 minutes, telling them what's waiting for them with their attitude of what's going to happen to them in that prison if they don't change their ways. So in that sense, he's playing God with them. That's one story. Later on in the movie, his son, he finds out, is in prison as well, another gangbanger who won't talk to him because the son hates him because he abandoned his mother, and the son holds it against him and considers him an evil man. Later on in this movie, I forget the name of it, Ving Rhames' character gets cancer, brain cancer. There's very interesting scenes between him and his neurosurgeon, played by a frail, elderly, white-haired white man who's trying to help him, and this monster big guy. Movie Caged Animal, Ving Rhames. Maybe that was it. Unbelievable movie. Very simplistic plot. So he gets brain cancer. The son won't talk to him. Finally sends a message down the line that he wants to talk to his son. The son doesn't want to see him, and he says, why should I talk to you? And he says, son, I have cancer. So he says, so what do you want from me, sympathy? But eventually the son warms up to him, and they become sort of somewhat, they have a little relationship in prison. And then the way the script is written is very intriguing. The Ving Rhames character says that God works in strange ways, and he says, it was the cancer that God gave me that enabled me to reach out to my son and have my son reach back out to me and for me to have something with my son before I died. I thought that was interesting, and it was very beautifully written in that sense. Very simple theme, but very well done and very satisfying as a movie. But does real life work that way? I said to myself. I mean, does real life work that way? I go back again. I'm a realist. At the end of the day, I'm a realist. When, you know, I don't want to go into me again. It's too much me. Well, it is about me. May as well be about me. But again, I go back to when I was a kid watching the fights. You know, the Gillette, to look sharp and beyond the ball, to be sharp and beyond. Da-da-da. My father watched the fights every Friday night, so I had to watch them. I was a kid. I couldn't go out yet. So he watched the fights. My uncle, I loved my uncle. He would sit on the couch, and every blow he would feel. At least my father didn't move. I knew my father was like somehow smarter. No disrespect. But my uncle was more primitive. As the fighter he was rooting for was throwing punches. He was moving on the couch. He threw a left, my uncle moved with the left. He threw a right, my uncle moved with the right. And grunched and groaned and And I looked at it as a kid saying, all right, there's a difference in people, I'll tell you that. I liked my father more than my uncle at that moment. I thought there was something a little off there with the movement. But anyway, the fighters, when they would come out, would pray. As I said, on one side of the ring, the fighter would pray to God, get on his knees, cross himself. And the other diagonal side, fighter get on his knees, cross himself. Both praying to God. It was so touching. And one would win and one would lose. So why did one win and one lose? I didn't understand that. Maybe one was better? I didn't understand. I didn't understand it. But even today when a fighter wins, as I said to you, they usually ask him,
How did he win? How did he beat this other? He said because of his faith in God. God, I like that. I like that part of it. HBO usually cut him right off. Or Showtime, the boxing. Showtime. The guys cut him right off. Whenever he says God, they don't let it go out on the air because that's against the atheists of Hollywood. You can't have the Caesars of Hollywood who control HBO, Showtime, BO, HBO, Obama. Those guys who control the world don't want you to hear anything about God. It's a real challenge to their power, you understand. So here we are, from God to Google in one generation. I have no question for you. None whatsoever. So let's play one clip from Patton, in clip 21, because this is an interesting one. I've always liked this one. Let's hear 21.
Some of you boys, I know, are wondering whether or not you chicken out under fire. Don't worry about it. I can assure you that you will all do your duty. The Nazis are the enemy. Wade into them. Spill their blood. Shoot them in the belly. When you put your hand into a bunch of goo that a moment before was your best friend's face, you know what to do.
And wouldn't it be nice if we had a commander-in-chief who spoke like that today instead of this creature that we have now in the White House? Who stabs the military in the back, cuts them to ribbons, and then sends them to the Philippines to give out, water and supplies. But God forbid they do their job in the proper way in Afghanistan, he gives them a court-martial. Wouldn't it be nice if we could be in love with America again, have pride in our country? If we had a leadership, if we had a Congress that supported our troops? You ever see the hospitals, these guys? Do you know what the vets are living through today? Look at this report on Drudge, Veterans Day. 40% of vets need food assistance. Can you believe this? New York City Food Bank had 40% of veterans need food assistance. 95,000 former service members in New York City eating at soup kitchens and pantries. How is that possible? How is that possible? How is that possible in this day and age? How? You've seen veterans' hospitals? They're not much better than they were in what was that movie with him, the young guy? I don't like him very much. I find him fraudulent. Tom Cruise, born on the 4th of July. Now, I never liked Tom Cruise. He's always looked like a fugazi to me. I'm sorry. I don't know how he got that. That's as far as I'll go with that analogy. The whole Katie thing, beard, as far as I'm concerned. My thought, don't know. No connections, no idea, nor do I care. But I never went for him playing the snappy officer. But the hospital is no better than it was in many cases than the Bronx Veterans Hospital in many cases. We haven't gone too far. You know, what else is in the news? Iranian Supreme Leader's $95 billion business empire. Oh, I'm shocked. I'm shocked that the head of the Revolutionary Guards is a crook. It's any different here? The military-industrial complex is alive and well in Iran as well as it is in Washington. Typhoon survivor. Oh, there was a survivor. Typhoon Haiyan survivor. I thought it was the end of the world. Yeah, well, that's nothing. I was in a Category 5 C once. I didn't know what to do. It was the most frightening thing on earth. You know, natural disasters are something to live through. I remember hurricanes and tornadoes when I was a young man. No, I was on a ship once in a typhoon, a small one. They don't call them that in the South Pacific. And when that sea started to bang that iron hull of that ship, she was only a 5,000-tonner and a flat bottom at that. She was designed for the Antarctic, and it really shouldn't have been put out between Tahiti and Fiji because those waters are nice when they're calm, but when they're rough, that thing rolled. It rolled like Chris Christie on the way to a polling booth. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
All right. Now, let's turn the clock back to 2009 on the Savage Nation and listen to when I also questioned my faith. Play it again, Sam.
So what value does the Bible have in today's world? More value or less value? In these troubling times, does the Bible have more power for you or less power? You rely upon it more or less in these troubled times? Do you turn to the Bible and look for your answers? Are there answers in the Bible? Thou shalt not see the kid in his mother's milk. What does all this mean? What meaning does this have? How can it help you? Where's the power in God's Word? If this is God's Word, if you're not an atheist. or a total skeptic? What value does this meaningless old book have? Why do so many millions of people cling to it, this rock of ages? Why do they go each week to the church? Why do they go each week to the synagogue? Why do they pray? Why do they put on their vestments? Why do they speak to God each week or some several times a day in their houses of worship? Well, I suppose they receive a sense of universality and eternity, and so they can tolerate the present by living in the eternal. I suppose that's the only answer I could come up with. In other words, if you can get out of the present and move into the eternal in some manner through your religion, it gives you a sense of peace to understand that evil has always been in mankind's lot. It always has been and always will be. And so, therefore, I guess it's a way to rise above it all, I suppose. I suppose I should be more religious and more worshipful. Suppose I should be a better attender in the house of prayer, but I don't. I don't attend the house of prayer. I've become somewhat of a cynic in the last few months. Maybe that's why I'm not feeling that good. Maybe I have to go back to this. Maybe that's what's missing in my life. A few years ago, I was a much more of a believer than I am now. I can't say why. I mean, I don't really believe in it much anymore, and I don't know. I got cynical about it all. Money started to get to me. The violence surrounding religion got to me. I said, a pox upon all of them. That's what happened. I swear to God, with all the murder surrounding religion, killing over religion, my God, your God, I kill you and your children. I couldn't take it anymore. So I started to get, you know, jaded and cynical. I don't like being here. I would rather have a child's view of the world. I'd rather believe in Mickey Mouse. I'd rather have a coloring book in my head. You know, there's God up there, my mother's cooking for God. Yeah, I'd rather believe. But who could believe that every day? You look around, you see the children with cancer. You see the best people on earth dying. And some of the most evil vermin rising to new heights of power. You see some of the most unqualified evil people in the world rising to heights you can't imagine. And to positions of power and authority that is unrecognizable. And you say, where's God? And this is nothing compared to what people are living through and have lived through. And this is nothing. This is baby stuff what we're watching here. The baby steps of Marxism. Baby steps of Marxism. Goo, goo, wah, wah. The Marxist baby is crawling through America. This is only the infancy. The Marx baby is in its diapers. Baby of Marxism is only in its diapers. It has not yet learned to walk. It's still crawling. And look where we are today, I say to myself. And yet even in the Soviet Union, the ex-Soviet Union, there were people who believed. They were put into the Gulag Archipelago for going to church. They had to pray underground. The Christians had to pray underground. The Jews had to pray underground. Because the state was the only religion that was permitted.
Savage. That was in 2009 when I said the Marx baby is in diapers. Well, he's got the britches on now. He's gone from the diapers to the britches. He's feeling his oats. I think he's ready to throw away his training wheels. And, you know, with Obamacare, he's ready to toss the training wheels away and go on the two-wheeler. He'll soon be on the Harley of Marxism if the man is not stopped. If there is no movement to impeach this presidency and his Revolutionary Guards, remember, mark this down. Obama's Revolutionary Guards, his inner circle, Valerie Jarrett, you name them, they're as fanatical as Iran's Revolutionary Guards in terms of their zeal and their commitment to their cause.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage. Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
Waking up the dead tonight. Where is everybody? Like a dead club night. It's different. You can do the same show every night, but I have a fifth, sixth sense in radio. I don't know where the people are. I have no idea what they're doing Veterans Night. I'll say three-day weekend. They're not home already? They push it now. See, this is the lazy society of quitters that we have. They get a three-day weekend, they push it to four. They get the flu tomorrow. The sniffles. They stay in Vermont if they're in New York or wherever. When they go on a weekend like this, they needed another day in Napa to get drunk again? Another night in Napa to have another wine supper. Stuff your guts like a goose. Like grind stuff into your gullet. Kill your liver. Whatever. Do what you want. It's your life. I don't care. But where is everybody? They're not even in cars? And speaking of geese and, you know, something is wrong when I agree with Charles Schumer. And today is one of those days. I'm shocked. I'm giddy with this. Schumer came out against chicken that's going to be slaughtered and raised in China. And they're going to bring it into America. Can you believe this? I mean, how'd that work out for our dogs and our cats? The chicken from China killed our dogs and cats. So now they need a new market. So they got some shyster congressman to go to the agriculture department to let them, listen to this, raise the chicken in China is bad enough and slaughter it in China and then send it over here. I would never, ever eat Chinese chicken. Let them eat. Let the people from the agriculture department eat General Cho's chicken. Listen to clip two now. Charles Schumer, I agree with him. It's shocking.
China has a terrible record on health safety, and chickens are one of the things that need the most care and inspections. China has been a massive source of food poisoning here in America for years. Why is the USDA doing it? We just don't know.
I can't believe it. I'm shocked. Well, I can figure this out, okay, how it happened that he's interested in a chicken. And it's a natural affinity, okay, for Schumer to be interested in chickens to this extent. But I think it goes back maybe to the Schechter brothers somehow. I can't explain it. I can't put my fingers on it exactly. All right, so let's say this is a good thing he's doing. Why would they bring Chinese chickens into America? I would never eat them. I would never touch any food, by the way, from China. I wouldn't. I try never to eat it. Now, I know if I go to a restaurant, I'm getting Chinese chicken already, probably. Worse than that. If I buy food, yes. I generally buy chickens raised locally. They're hippie chickens. I call them hippie chickens. They were happy to die. They died happily. I like beef that's raised on grass-fed beef. You don't like it? Go ahead. Eat your poison. Eat beef raised with toxic chemicals. See if I care. You got to be crazy not to want to eat foods that are raised organically if you can get them and you can afford it. Why not? Is something against it? Or does it make me into somehow I'm not a man because I'm eating food that's... I love that. Real men don't eat organic food. I love that one. No, they eat poison food. Real man smokes a cigar and eats a toxic steak and then follows it up with a nice buttery potato. How'd that work out for the arteries of your father? So, no, I'm into this if I can get it. You got Secretary of State John Kerry. I don't even want to play that. I want to run through the sound now that the guy's got for me. I really do. The typhoon bothers me, still bothers me. I can't believe this. How could anyone have faith after that? Where did your faith come from? I can understand you wanting to have faith as the typhoon's coming in and praying. You know, you talk about global warming. When the Little Ice Age was occurring, which was a couple of centuries back, not that many back, 1300s, there was still a Little Ice Age. You don't want to tell Al Gore that. His whole scam will fall apart on him because the Model T had not been invented yet. But what happened is that as the glaciers were expanding from the north into Sweden, there are records of the priests of the town going out with a cross and a Bible and standing in front of the oncoming glacier, which was moving slowly, wasn't like a typhoon, trying to get God to stop the glacier from coming down into their Verdon valleys. I couldn't believe ice was coming down. Man had lived through a period of global warming during which agriculture had greatly expanded on the planet long before global warming was blamed foolishly on man's activities. We had global warming, and then we had global cooling, the Little Ice Age. Little to do with man's activities. But the point is that the priests prayed before the moving ice pack as it was moving down the valley. You understand what I'm saying or not? Does it make any sense to you? All right, it's very hard in radio to know who's listening and when. I don't know who's listening right now. Where are they? I can tell right now that not everyone's listening and normally listens. They're not here. I don't know where they are. What are they doing? They're not listening to the wall banger. He's not on yet. She's on. That's all they want to see is lipstick on the collar. That's it. Sex sells. All right. Thank God. Someone else will be stuck in this Siberia when I'm gone. Later on, I will be day part. 3 to 6 on the east, 12 to 3 on the west. I have no competition at all in that day part from Fox News. Nothing. Zero. No competition whatsoever. Nice people, but no competition for me. Where was God in the Philippines? That's the question of the day. I could ask you, is Holder purging the Navy? You don't want to know about that. Michael Goodwin in the New York Post wrote an interesting article. De Blasio wins with Obama's babyish utopianism. Very well written, but I'm not going to read it since he won't come on the show. Don't read Michael Goodwin of the New York Post. Pay no attention to him. He's a crackpot. No, I'm just kidding. He writes well, but he must be a crackpot if he was afraid to come on the show. What's this? Obama threatens GOP with executive orders on drawer full of ideas. Yeah, the Revolutionary Guards. Did you see Homeland last night? She's starting to wear thin on me. What's her name, that actress? Claire Danes? Claire Danes? I liked it till I found out they're trying to remake her as a sex symbol, and I don't like her anymore. I like her as a half-crazy, vulnerable woman. I like her in that role. But now I saw a new picture of her, like Claire Danes posing nude with an airbrushed face. I don't want to know her anymore. Not interested. The world's filled with the empty heads from Hollywood. I don't need another one. I thought she had depth. She says, I don't want to be Carrie the rest of my life. Oh, come on. Honey, you don't know how lucky you got playing Carrie. You should be Carrie the rest of your life in real life and on the screen. You'd be a better person for it. Whatever you do, please don't try to become a bimbo. Whatever you do, please. You look like every one of those other fake-breasted, airbrushed girls from New York and Hollywood. I mean, nauseating. I liked her with the vulnerability and the craziness face that she could give, where she's in a conflict and she looks left to right, right to left, rolls the eyes. She looked like most of the women I've... No, I'm just... That's a stereotype. I realize that. We all want our women to be crazy. Those days are over. We're the crazy ones now. The guys have become, everything is wrong. Woo-hoo. The women are strong. They're tough as nails. The guys like, they told them to find their inner self. They found it. Now they can't do anything. They're broken. They're broken down and they can't move. The guy can't move. They're quitters. They break down. They cry. American men have found their inner self so sufficiently that they're broken down. The women have to run the country. Oh, yes, it's very good. Still no calls. Like, the pinball machine is tilted. Where is there? There's not callers tonight. Where'd they go? Are my callers out there? I got to hear from the regulars. Because if I don't hear from you, I'm liable to say something that really offends you. And here we go with the next soundbite. Here is the doctor. Here's the weirdest guy. I played Schumer with the chicken. I don't like Kerry. Let me be clear. I never liked him. I don't like fake patrician men who marry for money. Let's start from the get-go. I don't like fake patrician men who marry for money. The ketchup fortune, suddenly he's a genius. Bought his way into secretary. Now, he did run for the presidency. You never forget that. He's always waiting in the wings. He thinks he's going to make it. He thinks by stabbing Israel in the back, enough anti-Semites will vote for him, but it won't happen. That was a good line. That was as good as Henny Youngman, but I don't have a violin. Here is Secretary of State John Kerry at the United Arab Emirates. He's always on the globetrotting. Clip 3, please.
I believe the Prime Minister needs to recognize that no agreement has been reached about the end game here. That's the subject of the negotiation. The sanctions were put in place in order to bring about a negotiation. Because the first order of business of any superpower is to exercise its power thoughtfully.
Yeah, well, you should have done that before you reached out to Iran. You exercise it. Who taught you that? Of course the first order of business of superpowers is exercise your power thoughtfully. Well, you haven't done that, John. You reached out to Iran, who took you to the cleaners. You found out after the fact, Mr. Kerry, didn't you, that one of the girls in the State Department, some wobbly leftist revolutionary guard that Obama planted there, along with her cohort sister from the European Union who hates Jews, let the Iranians write clauses in the agreement that you didn't even see. So you gave them a blank contract. And they said, all right, fill it in any way you want to the mullahs. The mullahs, all right, fine, we'll sign that deal. Just leave a few blanks in there, like clauses 1 through 100, and we'll fill it in. Then Kerry says, holy God, that's the agreement they drafted? Yeah, some chick in the State Department, some left-wing fanatic put there by Samantha Powers, and some broad in the European Union that no one ever heard of, lady whatever. Remember I criticized, and they said, lady whatever? She's the foreign secretary of the European Union. I said, oh, my, that stinks to high heaven. This one is bad. And sure enough, they were worse than my instincts told me.
They got an agreement that the Mullahs could fill in any way they wanted. The clauses weren't even in there. Can you imagine? Now I'm giving you the news. Now you like me again. I'm giving you the reality. Now, it gets better in clip four. Listen to this now.
If we had to turn to a military option because we are left no other option, we must show the world we have exhausted every possible remedy and opportunity.
Yeah, that's an if question. That's some Secretary of State we have there. Let me give you an if. There's a, I got to do this in a family-friendly way. There's a Yiddish phrase, a Jewish phrase that goes like this. It's, if my Zadie had you-know-what, she'd be my Zeta. Now, what that means is, if my grandmother had you-know-what, she'd be my grandfather. That's an if. That's what Kerry just said. If my Zadie had you-know-what, she'd be my grandfather. My Zadie had you-know-what, she'd be my Zeta. Zadie means grandmother, and Zeta means grandfather. So it's the same thing what Kerry just said. If we had to turn to military action because we left no option, we must show the world we have exhausted every remedy and opportunity. That's very tough. That's something that the toughest of the tough would understand. But, yeah, but you see, it's still your grandmother because there's no you-know-what there. Where are we? It's already a quarter to the hour. My God, time did fly. I'm having a good show. I probably blew away most of my audience. The P1s left. They abandoned me because I dared question something. I got too cynical. The P2s left. I was rambling too much. The P3 audience left. I got too good a time on a miserable night. The P4s left. It's funny. It's radio jargon. It's like there's certain audience. P1s are like your primary audience. You're not allowed to insult them. What you have to do is make believe you're a Revolutionary War general who personally fought the war and then sell them a floor mat. That's right. And tell them that you're a great American. That's the P1s. So I can't do that. It's not my cup of tea. My cup of tea is, I like Earl Grey myself. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
So we have the most incompetent, divisive administration in American history. And this is a shocking story that just came out. I'm saving it for the end of the hour. Criminal terror charges filed against Obama in Egypt. Alleges involvement with the Muslim Brotherhood. I'm not making this up. Sources in Egypt on the WND are now reporting that Egyptian lawyers have filed criminal terrorism charges in the International Criminal Court against President Obama, in addition to the criminal terrorism charges previously filed in Egyptian courts against the president's half-brother, Malik Obama. Malik Obama is quickly becoming a person of interest in Egypt for his alleged management of funds for a terrorist organization based in neighboring Sudan. A group of Egyptian lawyers, meanwhile, have charged President Obama with crimes against humanity for his support of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Obama is likely to be a subject in Morsi's criminal trial because of evidence the Obama administration used the U.S. Embassy in Cairo to provide direct financial support to key Muslim Brotherhood political operatives with the full knowledge and complicity of the Morsi government, as WND was first reported in August. Now, I had Waleed on Friday. We'll have to follow this up this week. This is very serious business. This is very serious business because, remember, Obama tried to prevent the Egyptians from self-determination while speaking out of the other side of his mouth talking about democracy. He was fighting their democracy. They didn't want Morsi. They hated Morsi. They hated the Muslim Brotherhood. They hated what they were doing to the country, during which the Christian minority was torched, destroyed, and plundered during the reign of the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi. And remember who Obama supported, the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi. So finally they said they had enough. They threw Morsi out. He's on trial. And the military took over. And which side were we on? And where did Wacko McCain go? Remember Wacko McCain? Wacko McCain should be tried on terrorism charges, by the way. So should Lindsey Graham be charged on terrorism charges. Egypt threw Morsi in jail. Egypt wanted no more to do with the Muslim Brotherhood. These two crazy meddlers, these warmongers, McCain and Lindsey Graham, had the gall to go to Egypt and tell the Egyptian people that democracy dictates that they not do what they were doing. Who the hell were they to tell the Egyptians what they knew was going on was wrong? These two guys are very at high risk right now of being dragged into the International Criminal Court, in my estimation, to face terrorism charges for supporting the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Now, wouldn't that be a turnabout? Would that be a shocker if the whole House of Cards came tumbling down because of what they try to do to the Egyptian people? Would that not be interesting? Well, don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. They have ways of controlling these things. If your son, let's say, stole a bong from a pot store, you go to jail for 2 years. But if you bomb a nation that's sovereign for no reason, you go to the UN and get an award. Now let's listen to the genius John Kerry, the pseudo-aristocrat with ketchup money in clip five.
I'd say a number of nations, not just the French, but ourselves and others, wanted to make sure that we had the tough language necessary, the clarity in the language necessary, to be absolutely certain that we were doing the job and not granting more or doing something sloppily that could wind up with a mistake.
Wow, that's really after the fact. You know, thank the French. The French were the only one of the Western alliance who said no to this agreement to stab Israel in the back with Iran. Did you know? You don't even know this. It's not of any interest to anybody in America except the fanatics. The people who really understand this realize that the French were on the right side. This is a strange thing that went on. There must have been a sunspot because I agree with the French and I agree with Schumer all in the same weekend. There has to be a sunspot. I know that they were threatening over the weekend that a satellite was going to fall to Earth somewhere. I was afraid it was going to hit my house. Thank God it fell in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. But maybe that explains why I agree with the French and Schumer the same weekend. This is bizarre, right? I mean, Schumer's against Chinese chickens. And I don't mean General Cho's chicken in a Chinese restaurant. I mean because now suddenly the agriculture wants to bring in chickens raised and slaughtered in China. Poison. How'd that work out for your dog that wound up with kidney failure? So I agree with Schumer on that. Well, he and I agreed on this Dubai port deal, by the way. Then, now France says no. Yet they say no. No, 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 no. To Kerry for the deal to stab Israel in the back. Again over the weekend. They're the only country. The Brits are gone. They're finished. Whatever Obama wants, the Brits do, apparently. They're like an appendage of Obama. What happened to England? My God, I watch war movies. What happened to them? How could I not finish this up? We have to now listen to Chris Christie on This Week with George Stephanopoulos in clip number 7.
Chris Christie. Political advice from people who ran the Romney campaign is probably something nobody should really give a darn about.
He's right.
So let's start with that. But
right.
Secondly,
no, I agree with him.
All these issues
I don't listen to the Romney
people. And if
people.
I ever run for anything again, they'll be vetted again.
Good.
If you're in public life, that's what you have to understand.
Right.
But listen to Governor Romney.
I like his voice. See, that's the thing. He's very appealing. Very, very Tony Soprano in an upscale way. No, you can see why he won New Jersey. He's talked straight up. He'd be a great talk show host. Why would he want this job when you can run a state like that? Think of the sporting goods store. But the thing is, he's got a future. So just analyze it. Analyze this. Would you rather keep losing elections or get 50% of what you want?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
11-11, 2013. Welcome to hour number 3 of the Savage Nation for this Monday. You want to hear the stories? Are you sure? Well, it is Veterans Day. And so let's look and see what Obama's doing. Why he's purging the military of all their top combat commanders. You think I'm making it up? Two more admirals were thrown out. Now, if you look into it, they were thrown out by Eric Holder. Eric Holder of Fast and Furious fame has power over the U.S. Naval command structure. That's right. Two hardline left-wing fanatics running America are purging the military. Welcome to the new America. Will there be an America left to fix after this gang is gone? That's the question. 52 million could lose health insurance.
The Affordable Health Care Act. The Affordable Health Care Act. Oh, these are the same people who now want to flood America with a fixed immigration system. Well, okay, I'll go on. I'll go on. There are other stories on the Savage Nation today. Kerry stabbed Israel in the back. In fact, the girls who worked for him in the State Department permitted the Iranians to write amendments into the deal that he wanted to sign, giving them power to do anything they wanted with nuclear weapons. Beyond belief. Just beyond belief. That's your bumbling government at work. Give Iran everything and screw Israel. Meanwhile, in the military, Christians are living in a culture of fear. They're being intimidated by the fanatic perverts, deviants, and atheists. This is what's happened to America under this radical leftist anti-Christian government. You think I'm making it up? I pity you. Record number of foreign students hit the United States. China is conducting joint exercises in Hawaii as I speak. Oh, it's for peaceful methods, of course, of dealing with earthquakes and stuff like that. It's not to give the Chinese any inroads into America to take over the country. No, no, no. Iran, healthcare, military, Obama plays 150th round of golf as president golfer. This is the Savage Nation. Woman fails firefighter fitness test five times, still graduates. Hillary bans reporters from all events. In Virginia, McAuliffe, never ever in office, a fundraiser for Hillary, elected, shall I say, selected to be governor. His first executive order, to protect gays. You know where their priorities are. Up there with everything else. Just up there with everything else. So Obama has threatened the GOP with executive orders on all of his new ideas. That was Friday night while you were, I don't know what you were doing. President Obama on Friday night continued throwing his entire second term agenda against the wall, challenging Republicans to join him and support more federal spending, pass amnesty for 30 million or 50 million illegal aliens, and tackle all of the other left-wing challenges. We saw how well he did with Obamacare, and that doesn't stop him. The man doesn't understand that it's a failure. The man keeps ratcheting up his partisanship. He keeps ratcheting up his left-wing fanaticism, no matter what failures he faces. It's never enough for these left-wing. And I consider them the equivalent of the Revolutionary Guards in Iran. Make no mistake about it. Those around Obama are just as fanatical as Iran's Revolutionary Guards. The IRC in Iran is no more fanatic than those surrounding Obama in so many ways. And unfortunately for us, he turns his wrath on the American people, not on our enemies. In fact, he sent John Kerry, the great friend of Israel, to stab Israel in the back. Who better to stab Israel in the back than John Kerry? Anyway, it's the Veterans Day show on the Savage Nation. I have a couple of questions for you. And I don't know what they are. Do I? What is your favorite? Who is your favorite veteran? I mean, that's a standard meat and potatoes question. We'll get Millie calling about her, you know, her uncle or whatever. That's okay. I'm in a cynical mood today. We could do one of those. You've heard it all day long. You're probably burned out. I wanted to talk about the Philippines. 10,000 people. That's a lot of people dead. I'm surprised that Al Gore hasn't flown out there to try and peddle something about global warming. But putting aside my cynicism, 10,000 people died. So you still believe in God the next day. Now, many of them are, by the way, religious. They're good Catholics. Why did God kill all 10,000? They did something wrong? What do you mean? They cast their seed upon the ground? What did they do wrong? What did they do wrong that they should all have been killed? How the tidal wave distinguish between the good and the evil? Let's say you spend your whole life being good, and a tidal wave comes into your little coastal town. The tidal wave is going to spare you and kill your evil neighbor? No, you can't believe that. So that's why I was joking when I said we've gone from God to Google in one generation. And then tonight we got word of another terrible tragedy. One of the best senators in our Senate, Senator Inhofe, who just a few weeks ago went in for bypass surgery, wonderful son, orthopedic surgeon, and a pilot himself, died in the plane crash last night. Dr. Perry Inhofe was on board a plane that crashed near Owosso, Oklahoma, Sunday night. Dr. Perry Inhofe was an orthopedic surgeon in Tulsa. Imagine all of this study. Can you imagine all of that? He goes to Duke University, studies biomedical engineering and electrical engineering, graduates in 1984. Then he goes to Washington University in St. Louis for medical school, one of the best medical schools in the country. Very tough.
graduates in 1988, then does postdoc training at Bonds Hospital in St. Louis, University of Oklahoma College of Medicine. And he is a pilot himself and a pilot instructor. Engine failure, plane goes down. It bothers me. Why? Why would a good man like this, Senator Inhofe, suffer like this? Why would he be made to suffer like this? He did something wrong, and Dr. Perry Inhofe deserved to die, while gangbangers who dispense heroin in the ghetto deserve to live? Tell me. You have an answer to that one? Because if you're going to talk about Veterans Day and faith, let's talk about Veterans Day and faith. You know, all we hear about all day long is, okay. Yes, I'm not going to say what you've heard about. Talk radio is about news, but it should be about thought and conversation. It should be about entertaining thought and conversation. It's about faith, right? And I think the hurricanes in the Philippines are one important story. What our veterans have sacrificed to keep us free. But think about it. The Germans are lobbing 88-millimeter shells into the forest. The American men have dug holes in the ground in the snow and ice. They don't understand it. They see their friends turn into a mist of blood. Blood and mist. They're gone. They're not even there. Then I read a story this morning that really got to me on the issue of where is God? And that is this man, 88-year-old World War II veteran. Actually, he was a hero. He won many, many medals in Battle of the Bulge. He has a 57-year-old disabled daughter who his son has taken care of his whole life. The son has sacrificed his whole life to sleep at the foot of his sister's bed and care for her. The veteran is very depressed. He has liver cancer, then a liver transplant, then the lungs go. And he said each breath is like being waterboarded. The son comes home and he hears two pops. The father shot his daughter, then shot himself. So you ask yourself, is he a hero? Is the father a saint or is he a murderer? I mean, these are questions I want to ask. I mean, maybe it's depressing. Let's go back to what I'm talking about, which is God. Does he exist? Doesn't he exist? Why does he exist for you? Why doesn't he exist? I mean, do you really think about these things? I think about it all the time. I don't think a day goes by that I don't think about it from morning till night. I don't know how a conscious person can't think about this. I don't understand how a person can even live without thinking about it. Now, let's say you're a person who says there can't be a God. Well, then what do you believe in? Tell me what you believe in. Stephen Hawking's? You believe in National Geographic? Every night now they're scaring you with a comet attack. You know, they've gotten so psycho on the National Geo channel. It used to be pretty good. They're into such fear-mongering. Every show we're going to be hit by meteors and comets wipe out Earth. Look what the dinosaurs... It's like Al Gore is the producer for some reason. I'm sick and tired of hearing it already about the meteor death of the Earth. Nothing but fear. That's all they sell. So let's go to you, the caller. Tim in Houston, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike, how are you doing today?
Good.
Just wanted to say that I am an agnostic, but I actually believe there is a God. But if I ever, you know, death comes to me and I found out that, you know, God actually wasn't a real thing, I guess I wouldn't be completely unhinged like a lot of people. My main problem is to believe in organized religion. You have to believe that every other religion is wrong. And anybody that doesn't believe, you know, say you're a Christian, then you have to believe that every Muslim's going to hell. And it's just a very unsettling thought to think that just anybody that doesn't agree with you exactly deserves to burn the rest of their lives, and it's just very unsettling to me.
So what is an agnostic as opposed to an atheist? An atheist doesn't believe in God. An agnostic hedges his bet?
Yeah, basically, you're a nature guy. You can look around you. It's pretty obvious to me that, you know, something designed... That math and just everything, life isn't an accident. So I think that definitely somebody made us. But I think that organized religion has basically just been hijacked by man.
Well, I've met people who are very big believers in God and the hereafter, but they don't believe in organized religion. They don't like it because they feel it's just a way of milking the public for money. You know, mulcting the public is the correct word. M-U-L-C-T-I-N-G, not milking. It's mulcting, which is almost the same thing. But I thank you for the agnostic call. If it's too depressing for you, I suggest you go listen to MSNBC, where you can snicker at the American way. Yeah, all night long, you get that bargain. It's a bargain. It's a bargain. General Electric lets them do this because that way they're not outside the door of General Electric demanding they pay their fair share. They're telling you to pay your fair share. China, U.S. armies, by the way, today are going through a joint exercise in Hawaii. Oh, yeah, first time in American history. Never done before except under Barack Hussein Obama. Oh, I'm sorry, they're starting tomorrow. Our friends from China are there. Army officials from China and the U.S. are meeting in Hawaii for an annual disaster relief exercise. And a disaster relief. Do you actually believe the People's Liberation Army is in Hawaii under Obama? And this Dr. Strangelove there running the military? What's his name? Bagel? Hegel the Bagel? Dr. Strangelove? Do you actually believe they invited the Chinese troops to our shores for the first time in American history, by the way, in order to train for disaster relief? I don't. I don't believe it all. I don't believe it at all. I think Obama's giving them a little feel for the terrain. But let's let it go with that. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. My gift is such that I could do this standing up better. If I could get rolling on a rap and go for an hour or two without a break, then you'd really hear me. No breaks, no interruptions, but then there would be no show. See, that's the conflict. If I could get rolling, it takes me a while sometimes. I don't come out with pre-made pies for you. I got to bake the pie as we're going along. Got to heat the oven up, have a glass of wine, so to speak. You know what I mean? Rub my hands together and then roll the dough. Then once we get the oven in the pie in the oven, we can start to really roll on it. But that's what a good show is. So no, I'm not doing stand-up. This is not a pump for me to go out and do any. And no live. I am doing a live show, but you can't go to it. My new show opens January 1st. That's not really the new show. The new show is January 2nd. January 1st is the best of Golden Oldies because a lot of people aren't listening. The stations are still playing sports. Well, January 2nd is my real opening. January 3rd is a Friday, and then that night is my opening night party. I'm having an undisclosed location in San Francisco for, I don't know, 30, 40 people. And I'm going to read my discovered poems that young guy found, the jazz saxophonist. I called him last night. I'm going to have like 50 people, a buffet, some food to celebrate the show's opening. And I'm going to read like an old beatnik thing, sitting on a thing. I'm going to read the discovered poems of Michael Savage, radio poems. Remember I told you the 26-year-old jazz saxophone genius listened to me since he's a kid, and he captured these poems, and he sent them to me? Well, he's going to play the saxophone. I'm having him come up from L.A. It's a thing. I'll tape it. I'll put it on my website, okay? Maybe I'll develop something that night.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7286. Savage.
Great music. It really is amazing. Really great. It's amazing being at this stage in my career. I could do anything. Isn't it wonderful? There's a certain freedom. It's almost dizzying. Do you realize how free I am on this show? That instead of talking about Veterans Day, I'm talking about feeding birds, feeding turkeys vodka, chiropractors and podiatrists who are basically insurance frauds. Not all of them. Some. Certain. Some are nice. Who knows? I didn't finish the chiropractor story. I have to finish it. To make a long story short, some family members like chiropractic. I don't like with the bone cracking. I always feared a broken neck because I knew a doctor whose father was killed by a chiropractor. He swore he went in on a cold night in Kansas, and the father, you know, died on the table. They said, oh, heart attack. But he says he thinks the chiropractor broke his neck. So I don't let anyone manipulate my neck, my spine, nothing. They're my bones. They're not yours. You know, it's like our bodies, ourselves. In that sense, it's my bones, myself. If my bone hurts, it's my business. Leave me alone. That's okay. It works. But it worked for family members. Don't get me wrong. This is a very controversial thing I'm saying. They were cured in many cases. They've avoided surgery. They've been able to avoid the quacks at Stanford who right away cut, burn, and poison through chiropractic. But I was talked into it. He said, okay, just let him do this. I said, okay, but no popping, no touching of the neck. Here are the rules. No neck touching, no spinal manipulation. No, it'll be soft. He'll adjust the leg. And I said, all right, fine. I'm just telling you what's going on in my head right now, why I'm questioning God. Because it wasn't God who healed my pelvic girdle. It wasn't God who almost snapped my neck. It wasn't God who did that. It was a crackpot masseuse. So remember I was telling you that in the Fiji Islands, the colonialist friend, he was a wonderful man, by the way. He was a parasitologist. I love this guy. Originally from Brooklyn, but he affected over the years a British... He liked English. He was an Anglophile. He had gone to the London School of Economics, and then he went to the great tropical schools of tropical medicine when it really, really was a great field. Doug, see, he affected the whole British colonialist thing, not because he wanted to, you know, but he just loved them. So he got the pipe. He was an older guy, I mean, but he's a brilliant, brilliant writer, and I love the guy. He was like a mentor of mine. I thought he was so great. He introduced me to Chinese, Thai food. I never knew what it was. It was like overly spiced Chinese. What did I know from Queens? We ate crispy noodles that killed half the men in Queens. Between the pastrami sandwiches and the bad noodles in the Chinese restaurants on Union Turnpike, the men didn't stand a chance. No, look at the grave markers. You look at the grave markers running from Queens out to Nassau, Suffolk. Take a look at the ages, 49, 50, 51. Yeah, that's because they knew an awful lot about nutrition and health. Listen to the morons. Eat chicken fat. Eat schmaltz. Put fat in your throat. Smoke. It's good for you. Don't worry so much. It's a liberal thing. It's a liberal thing to take care of yourself. Be a real conservative. Drop dead at 39. Oh, I listened to this. I can't believe what I'm hearing. Like Neanderthals.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
The one and only Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, it is a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I've been listening for a long time. I wanted to say I'm just amazed in this day and age with someone as learned as yourself, who just is one of the smartest people I listen to, can even believe in God today. I mean, it shocks me, actually. That
I mean, I like that. I like shocking you. Do you find it offensive that a man of intelligence would believe in God?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's absolutely never been any proof of it. And in fact, if you're, you know, Catholic or someone who believes in the Bible, it was admittedly written by man. I mean, at least Muslims and other religions, you know, try to act like it was, you know, that their word was written by God. But I mean, even I was raised.
Okay, I've heard you discuss. I don't reject what you have to say, nor am I going to here to try to turn you into a religious person. But let me ask you something. Do you believe Albert Einstein was super intelligent?
Of course.
Okay. Are you aware that Albert Einstein was a great believer in God?
Yes, I am.
Okay. No, I don't know, because a lot of atheists are confused because of the college posters of Einstein with the hair and with the tongue out that they put on campuses in order to debase his image. He was actually, he said the more he studied the perimeters of the universe, the more he came to believe there had to be a God.
Right, but I also believe that religion is something that it can shape you throughout your entire life. Things that he had gone through had, for some reason, you know, he had questions that could not be answered, and so he turned to religion, much like yourself. You had said that, you know, you had discovered him when you had hit the bottom. I think that, you know, like some people out there, like, you know, I hate to bring up his name, but like Jesse Ventura or even like George Carlin used to say about God, that really it's something that if you have this hole in what you know, think is life, and you have no answers for that, you have to go to this, you know, invisible man that is supposedly up there watching everything we do and all the evil that...
No, I've heard the atheistic arguments, and it's all, you know, it's sort of hollow, the whole thing, because have you not had black moments in your life where there was nowhere to go? Who do you turn to? What do you turn to?
With religion, you're told that God only helps...
No, but I'm asking you as a believing atheist. You believe in the religion of atheism, which is believing in nothing. And nothingness, but you actually believe in something which is nothingness when you think about it.
I more believe in people or something physical than something that.
But have you ever fallen down a ravine and broken your leg and laying there with no one to rescue you? Who would you call?
There's no one to call. I mean, what good would calling God do? I mean, here's you.
So you'd pick up your cell phone and you wouldn't dial G-O-D, you dial 911. I get it.
Right. I mean, I don't think it's an argument. You know, I don't even want to say it's an argument. It's really just your belief system. You know,
that's right. You're not going to convince me not to believe in a supernatural being that controls the universe. But you got to understand this about me. I do not believe God is omnipotent. I believe God is omnipresent. You know, there's a big difference.
That he's everywhere at all times, but he doesn't know everything.
See, many years ago, I went through a whole soul searching where I was about to become a total atheist. And I'd ask myself, how could a little child suffer from leukemia like this? How could a little child have cancer and suffer so violently? Why is it that evil men seem to thrive and get away with murder and rape and killing hundreds of thousands of people, while the innocent children, sometimes you go to a back ward of cancer and you see suffering amongst children? I said, what kind of God is there in heaven with a thing like this? And I found a book on this. It was written by I believe it was a Reform rabbi, and he was more a philosopher, and he said that if he believed God was omnipotent but not omnipresent, he would cease believing because he would not accept the God that was so cruel.
I guess I got to apologize. And when you say omnipresent, you mean that he's everywhere at all times, or what? I mean, what's the difference between
I believe that God's work is apparent everywhere. If I'm sitting in my radio studio looking out of the window and I see a bush, and I see an airplane, and I see the breeze, and I see a bird, okay? These are all manifestations of God to me.
Okay.
To me. It doesn't mean I see a spiritual being walking around who's going to wind up in my living room. I'm not Jimmy Carter. I don't believe he's going to show up in a white robe in my living room and I have to drink strychnine in order to prove it.
That's all the proof you need that there is a God, is because there are these things that are present that you see every day.
Yes, in other words, how could this have happened by accident?
I think that there's many, many things, and I think you'd agree with this, there's many, many things in the world that cannot be explained by us. I think that man is, pretty low on the...
Wait, but you just touched again on something you've struggled with all your life, and I agree with you. There are many things we can't understand. So what do you do at that moment when you reach a point you can't understand? What do you turn to? I don't understand it, and that's enough for you?
Well, no, I try to study as much as I can of things that have actually happened and people that have lived in the world and experienced what is to experience in the world and maybe what they're... I kind of see it as a study that you spend your whole life trying to...
Look, we're not going to change each other's mind. A belief is a faith. That's all there is. It's a faith and period. You can't prove it. It's a faith. That's why it's called faith-based.
In this horrible, disgusting world with what goes on every day, how can you have faith in this being? Even if there is a God, say that there is a God. If there is a God, how could he be such an incredibly cruel being to allow what happen in the world? You know how there was...
I have asked the same question. I've gone right there. I'm not different than Mother Teresa, who doubted God's existence at times in her life, but still trekked along on the path of God. Because there's no alternative. I cannot take myself off this path at this point in my life. It's impossible.
The story of Noah's Ark, obviously. Flood, because everything was so evil in the world that he needed to wash it clean, basically, and start over. You can't tell me that after all these thousands of years after that things are not 10,000 times worse than they were back then. And
yeah, but who says there's not going to be another flood?
There could be, but it's been so long. I mean, there's just no...
Yeah, it's been a long time. That's why I have survival food on a hillside house somewhere.
I'm with you. I mean, I do think it's probably coming, but I think we're more likely to destroy ourselves before that actually happens. But I just...
Yeah, that's a whole separate discussion. I want to ask you something. You've got my curiosity. Were you raised in any religion?
I was raised as a Catholic. I went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. I was confirmed in the Catholic religion, although at confirmation I was right towards the time of not, of really falling out of belief. But
what made you a lapsed Catholic? Something happened in your life? What happened?
I was the weird kid that was like 9 or 10 years old in Catholic. If you're in Catholic schooling, you go to church probably 2 or 3 times a week. And so I would sit in church, and the priest would want us to be involved, so he would ask us questions. And I would be the weird kid that stood up and said, okay, look, if there is a God, then, why does these bad things happen, blah, blah, blah. And they never had
yes.
an answer for me. And
all right. No, hey, that happens in every religion. Every religion has kids who ask these questions. You're not the weird one. You're the smart one. You're the one who challenges authority. I understand that, but I've been that way all my life.
Right. I felt weird because there was no other child, and in fact, I was laughed at for even.
See, here's the thing about it. Do you do things in your life that you're ashamed of? Things that you really wish you didn't do?
Of course.
Okay. So who do you apologize to for that?
There is nobody to apologize to.
Don't you do any mea culpa saying, God, I'm sorry, I've sinned, I can't help myself?
No.
Well, what do you say to yourself? What do you say to yourself at that point?
You know what? I don't. I don't have those kind of internal monologues. I basically try to live my life. You know, I feel that the Ten Commandments are a great way to live. I think that, you know, all of the things that they list are things that you should probably try to do.
Did you say the Six Commandments?
No, I said the Ten Commandments.
I'm joking. Come on. Because most Democrats believe in Four Commandments.
If you listen to George Carlin, it should really be like two, because a lot of them are
the last. No, but most Democrats believe in Four Commandments. Well, it's an interesting conversation we've had so far, Mark. We haven't changed each other's position, and nor did we try to. We were like gentlemen having a discussion, which is the object of a discussion, which is not really to move the other guy, but just hear the other guy out. Would you agree with me on that?
Absolutely, yeah. I listen to you every day. I do love your show a lot, and I really do believe that you are just an incredibly intelligent person. I can't believe the radio's where you landed up, you know, from being a professor and being all these things that you could have been or have done in your life, that you know, you didn't go into a different path, and you're basically...
Well, I know that it's very interesting, but I was blocked in my desires to make a life in academia because I was a white male, although my credentials were the best on earth. They were only choosing people who were of a certain, let's say, stripe. But that's a long time ago. I have a large classroom every day. You can do the math. I mean, the audience is bigger in one probably 10-minute period than I would have had in my entire life as a professor. So things worked out very well. I have no complaints on that level at all. I'm not sitting here grousing about what happened. It was all, and I'm going to say this something now you're not going to believe, it was all God's will. See, I actually believe that it was all God's will.
I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
I swear to God, I just opened up Fox News. Tipsy turkeys, New Hampshire birds fed beer for flavor and size. When it comes to pairing beer with poultry, Joe Moret isn't too fussy. His turkeys will drink, blah, blah. Moret is raising turkeys, has been giving his birds beer since 1993. When he has worked, he's popped open a few cans after work on a hot July day. A turkey knocked one over and started drinking, he said, and they've been sipping the suds ever since. He says that the lager makes birds fatter, more flavorful, and juicier. Well, look what it's done for Germany. Oh, yeah, it's noticeable, he said. It's not a strong, gamey flavor. It's a nice turkey flavor. And the people love the gravy is darker and tastier from the turkeys that drink beer. Now enters PETA. The wackos entered. That's their business now. The animal nut group, PETA, said turkey shouldn't be fed beer. I don't know. Who cares what they say? But a poultry expert with the University of New Hampshire Cooperative said it's unlikely the birds are suffering. Hey, listen, schmucks from PETA. You know I'm against torturing animals. I'm a great guy with animals. But get off your case already, moron. The turkeys are raised to be killed for food. If you get them drunk, they're going to be less frightened, and they're not going to feel pain, as much pain as they would if they weren't drunk. So, morons, there's a certain limit to your idiocy. Your fanaticism has to have some common sense, doesn't it? Whatever. Kathy Brock, National Director of Humane Heartland, which oversees the treatment of farm animals, said that standards from the American Humane Society don't prohibit serving beer to animals. Oh, good. I consulted with an avian veterinarian who said that while giving beer to turkeys is not a standard protocol, hops could be beneficial for the intestinal tract. You see that? Moret's turkeys are not the first animals to consume alcohol. Japanese farmers have been sent to feed cattle beer to stimulate their appetites, and a winemaker and farmer in the south of France have experimented with feeding cows the remainders of pressed grapes, sounds like North Beach, to produce meat they've dubbed Vinboven. That stuff is the worst garbage I ever drank in my life, what they drink in the Italian restaurants. That grappa. I hate it. It's the most carcinogenic drink I've ever put near my mouth. It smells like nail polish. Why would anyone drink grappa? Why is that an Italian thing? What is this? You got to understand where the origins of grappa, as far as I know, and correct me if I'm mistaken, let's say you're an Italian who drinks a lot of grappa. You're killing yourself, number one. I have nothing against wine. Grappa, you know what grappa is made from? It's the dregs of the vat that is fermented. So how could that not be filled with carcinogenic fusel oils? The dregs of the vat would contain more fusel oils than any other grape-related product. So if you're drinking grappa, I mean, I remember I'd sit in restaurants sometimes in the summer with the guys when I was still going there. I don't go there anymore. I'd rather go to a Subway sandwich shop than an Italian restaurant in North Beach lately. Nothing against anybody. Not a personal. I'm not nothing against anybody. I've changed. I'd rather get a foot long than get a, well, I can't, it's a family show. I'd rather get a foot long in Subway than go and get, you know what, in one of the, I don't want it anymore. But I would sit outside on some summer nights that were Fellini-esque in North Beach with some guys, and they bring out the grappa, I'd have to leave. The combo between a cigar and grappa was enough to kill anybody. Nobody's body can take that. Say, well, they did it in the old country. How'd that work out for them? You know, there's a lot of myths about what people did in the old country. The guys who lived the longest in the old country didn't drink grappa and smoke cigars day and night. Some did, yes. But by and large, the human condition can, the human body cannot take that. I tell you that. Just study your epidemiology. But if you're an ignoramus and don't know epidemiology, I can't help you. I don't mean to insult you in any way. If you're an ignoramus, enjoy it. Now, where was God in the Philippines? Where was God in the Philippines? Now, if you read some of the Bible, as I do often on the show, and you know that, I'm not a cynical God-fearing man in that sense. It's like a combo. I'm sort of cynical and God-fearing at the same time. It's like hedging my bet. But Mother Teresa was the same way. You got to understand that. If you read Mother Teresa, she said she questioned God all the time toward the end of her life. Now, you don't want to know that. I woke up today and I said, from God to Google in one generation. You talk about cynicism. How could these young people believe in anything other than they walk around with an iPhone like it's the Holy Grail? They don't look up. She's looking for Mr. Right. She passes him in the street. She doesn't see him because she's looking in her palm for the answer. Hitting every minute. Walks right past Mr. Right. She doesn't understand why. So I'm just going to ramble on and on tonight. I'm not going to do anything cogent, as we would say in science. There is no cogent show tonight. There's no point in being any cogency. What's the point of it? It doesn't sell anyway. Logic is dead, right? Logic is dead, so why be cogent? Since I have an artistic soul, I'll just let it roll. That worked. See, it worked just like since I'm going to let it roll. That was good. The news is horrendous. The news from the home front is awful. The war on the Western Front is worse than ever. Nothing is good in America. Everything's bad. Chris Christie is the hope. That's the great white hope, is Chris Christie. God. Oh, my. But you see, here's the thing. Here's the paradox in that one. The schmucks are so angry that Chris Christie won that they'd rather that they lose an election just to show how smart they are. The schmucks are so mad at Chris Christie that they'd rather lose the next election than see any Republicans win. That made sense. That makes good sense. Ever wonder how the Radical Revolutionary Guard left won? Have you figured out how the Obama Revolutionary Guards took power? It's exactly because of that attitude, right? McCain was no good. Romney was no good. I voted for Romney. Don't you remember? You don't remember that. I didn't like Romney. I knew he was middle of the road. But don't you remember a week before I came out and said, I'll support him anyway because God knows what we'll have if we get Obama? But many, oh, no, I'll show them. I'm a true believer. I'm a purist. I'm an absolutist. Oh, I'm a fundamentalist. I know what's right for America. I'll let Obama win so it all comes down. And then I'll show them how bad it is. Then they'll really vote for someone. That made sense. That worked out real well. And 3 more years to go and it's not over. Any wonder I talk to a dog. Now, I want to talk about a movie. Since the show is mine, and I'm really upset that there's 10,000 people dead in the Philippines, and no one had a chance. They could have been praying in the church for God to spare them. They could have held their little baby up to the heavens. It wouldn't have mattered. When that wave came, they all went under. So, what can I tell you? Now, I saw a movie the other night with an actor in it, Ving Rhames. One of the biggest guys I've ever seen in my life, Ving Rhames. Monster. First, I thought it was Mike Tyson in a jailhouse movie. I'm going to get back to God with this movie. I forget the movie. He plays the biggest guy in the prison, and everyone's afraid of him, as they should be, because he just looks at them. And they bring in, like, young punks who think they're tough, and the guard brings him in to see them, and he sets them straight in about 3 minutes, telling them what's waiting for them with their attitude of what's going to happen to them in that prison if they don't change their ways. So in that sense, he's playing God with them. That's one story. Later on in the movie, his son, he finds out, is in prison as well, another gangbanger who won't talk to him because the son hates him because he abandoned his mother, and the son holds it against him and considers him an evil man. Later on in this movie, I forget the name of it, Ving Rhames' character gets cancer, brain cancer. There's a very interesting scenes between him and his neurosurgeon.
played by a frail, elderly, white-haired, white man who's trying to help him, and this monster, monster big guy. Movie Caged Animal, Ving Rhames. Maybe that was it. Unbelievable movie. Very simplistic plot. So he gets brain cancer. The son won't talk to him. Finally sends a message down the line that he wants to talk to his son. The son doesn't want to see him. And he says, why should I talk to you? And he says, son, I have cancer. So he says, so what do you want from me? Sympathy? But eventually the son warms up to him and they become sort of somewhat, they have a little relationship in prison. And then the way the script is written is very intriguing. The Ving Rhames character says that God works in strange ways. And he says, it was the cancer that God gave me that enabled me to reach out to my son and have my son reach back out to me and for me to have something with my son before I died. I thought that was interesting, and it was very beautifully written in that sense. Very simple theme, but very well done and very satisfying as a movie. But does real life work that way? I said to myself. I mean, does real life work that way?